This week on RSBNB Update, we have an otherwise quiet week involving combat integrity, hugely important accessibility fixes for Seren Spirits, and Jagex goes to Parliament for a hearing on microtransactions, and we have all the details. We also have an unexpected discussion on the new comp cape design. This is RSBNB Update, episode 718, recorded Thursday, April 4th, 2019, the April U-turn. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for another episode of RSBNB Update. Just Tannis and myself sitting in this week, as per usual. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
And, of course, welcome back to all our wonderful, wonderful listeners who have been joining us on this adventure. And it's a bit of a quiet week this week, but it's not necessarily a happy, quiet week. We'll get to that as we progress through this episode. So, let's just dive right in. We just got off of a good recording of the monthly bit for our wonderful Patreon supporters, patreon.com/RSBNB. We'll talk more about that after. But in the meantime, I think we can talk about this week's update unless there's anything else you want to get off your chest.
No, I'm ready to get into it.
Okay. Well, actually, before we do that, I'll just mention that we do still have our spring survey running at update.rsbnb.com/survey, and we'd very much appreciate it if you guys listening to this would fill this out. It's our yearly survey that we use to guide where we want to take the podcast over the next 6 months to a year. And we ask for some basic demographic information. Then we want to know about you and the podcast, such as, you know, where do you listen to it? How do you listen to it? What do you think of what we're doing? Do you have any suggestions for us going forward? And then a bit about our Patreon supporters, and or rather our Patreon page. So we would very much appreciate it if you guys could fill out this survey for us. It will help us greatly in terms of guiding the podcast going forward. So once again, update.rsbnb.com/survey. Okay, so Combat Integrity Week and Patch Week, the first week of April. I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention the April Fool's joke on RS.
Yeah. What did you think of that, Shane?
Yeah, so when you opened up your secret package for the day that Posty Pete's been delivering on this day, you got a JMod, and as well as a JMod collection list. So whenever you would kill human NPCs around RuneScape, so men, guards, you name it, you would get unchecked JMods that would appear in your inventory, and you would tick them off of this list. And if you managed to collect all of them, you would get the Fooled title. And you could also put them in your player-owned farm. And, you know, we could go into the ethical side of keeping players in pens or keeping humans in pens on a farm, but I think I will leave that as an exercise to the listeners as to where you can go with that.
And just be happy we didn't have to breed them.
Yeah. We had a good chuckle about that, and I actually tried breeding them, but you can't put them in there. You can't put them in the breeding pen. I tried to put a mod Porky and a mod Luna in the breeding pen, and it just didn't work.
Oh.
So you could not breed JMods. I think that would have taken it to a whole other level if you could
that
have JMods
breeding
together.
Yeah, it would have been weird.
So this was, of course, April Fool's. It disappeared, and you wind up with a title at the end of it. So. But this week, of course, was also Combat Integrity Week, in that they're changing combat so that sign refreshes can now only be activated while you're in a bank area to prevent players from bringing sign refreshes directly to a PVM fight and activating them repeatedly whenever a sign is utilized in order to, you know, keep themselves fully alive. And, you know, it makes sense that this is the way that you would want it. So this is now into game. And also, they say, additionally, we want to stop Death Touch darts from being used at Telos to complete feats and achievements. While this update won't be releasing this week, that will be being released next week. And both of those make sense, I think. There's nothing too controversial about that. So.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of Death Touch darts piling up that I'm probably going to save for Dominion Tower, I think, unless you have a better idea where I should use them.
I've been saving mine for Nex and Calphite King just okay. so I can try to get my defenders.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Well, I think on that in that case, we can move on to the patch notes then. And you're seeing how light of a week it is, but we do actually have something else RuneScape related to discuss after this. So this week in patches, starting off with a fix for Araxor, it's no longer possible to use Bladed Dive to avoid Araxor's charge attack on the Darkness Path.
Oh.
I wonder who figured that one out.
Yeah, someone probably made a video about it, right?
And then yeah, that's typically
that's why we can't have these, nice things.
That's typically the place these bugs go to die.
Yeah.
So, that's true. Now, this one is really good. This next one is amazing. The Saren Spirit now has a jingle when it appears, which can be heard if sound effects are turned on, making it more noticeable. Yeah. There's also still the existing sound effect when the spirit is present, located under ambient sounds, but you'll also get a sound effect when the spirit spawns. And, you know, this is something we've been talking about for a long time, and I know you appreciate this one as an accessibility update.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, and not just this one. This is the third week in a row we've had something where a sound effect was added or improved. And I think it's absolutely just it's great. You know, this is one of the things that even Special Effects mentioned in their layout on how to make a game more accessible. So very, very cool. Great job, Jagex. Third week in a row.
Yeah, I like it when we see these little tiny patches, and I think the majority of the player base will go, okay, that's neat. But for you, it makes the entire difference in your gameplay.
Yeah, I haven't missed a Saren Spirit since I played this week, and I used to 50-75% I would catch, but I mean, I would miss them at times too. So
yeah,
this was good.
All right, now on to two very classic capes, the Cape of Legends and the Obsidian Cape. Both these capes have been slightly rebalanced to be more in line with their difficulty to obtain, and the Obsidian Cape will now provide more armor with slightly reduced offensive stats, whereas the Cape of Legends has had an increase in offensive and defensive stats. You know, I think this is really great because the Cape of Legends is one of the first famous capes in the game, and it needed a bit of love.
It did. It definitely needed a little something. I mean, that's one of the I think it might be the only cape that you can actually put up in your house to display that
in the case.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, and I remember getting the Cape of Legends, and you felt like you did something. You know, you did something. You got your Legends cape.
It was also, like the. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say it was like the stop on your way to getting a 99 cape.
Yeah,
you know, felt good.
They also added a teleport to the Legends Guild on the Legends cape.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
good.
I think if it wasn't for farming, I'd probably wear this cape.
Really?
Yeah. Cosmetically.
Yeah, I can't go quite that far. I like my particles.
Okay. And in regards to its stat rebalance, it was buffed from tier 40 to tier 50, armor from 11 to 16, style bonuses from 13 to 17. So, and you know, when you're looking at a tier 50 item, that's actually a pretty substantive buff. So that's good.
Yeah.
Obsidian cape statistically wise increased from 16 to almost 19, and style bonuses decreased from 17 to 13 for the Obsidian Cape. So those are the changes that were made to these two legendary capes, let's just say. One of them even more so than the other. Moving on to some changes with the Fire Spirit update from last week. An issue causing the host log from a Fire Spirit derived from using maple logs on a bonfire to read as Acadia logs on the tooltip has been fixed.
Well, that's probably good.
Yeah. Friends list joining an option or using the join right click option will no longer offer a wilderness lodestone teleport when your friend is at the grand tree.
What?
I have no idea why that would be the case, but that is definitely a weird one. New areas like the Peninsula for Needle Skips and the Lost Grove will now point to better lodestone options when using the joint option.
Okay.
That's good because, you know, if someone is in those areas, you want to go to Eagle's Peak for the Needle Skips. And the Lost Grove, I believe, would probably be Yanil.
Yamil?
Yeah, the Yanil Lodestone, yeah.
Huh, okay.
Because that's the closest one there is. So. Some graphical changes. The Slayer counter will no longer state that you have not obtained an Ushabti soul if the creature does does have a soul to obtain. That makes sense. Wouldn't want to provide the erroneous information that you could obtain a soul when you actually can't. Incense sticks update from this week. Oh boy, I'll be talking more about these in the What Have We Been Doing section. But prevented incense sticks from being crafted from items stored in a Beast of Burden. And you might be wondering why this is an issue, but the sense that I've got after playing with this a lot for the last week is that incense sticks are balanced around the logs and the ashes and the time it takes to actually craft them. Hence this Beast of Burden change. So... Yeah. That's my sense on it.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that's weird that they would do that with that, but yet you can still load up for overloads and your Beast of Burden. That's not a problem.
Well, one is consuming, one is producing.
No, when you're producing them, it raises your XP per hour like tremendously. If you're not using, like, if you're using,
but you still need to go into the bank to dump out the overloads, then.
Yeah, yeah. Once you're done,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just, you know, adds on to the inventory space, and maybe this is something they should look at for Herblore too. But my sense is that incense sticks, in particular, are balanced around their creation speed and the logs and the ashes, rather than the herbs. So.
Weird.
Noted drops by the dwarfweed incense will now be converted back into their noted forms before hitting the bank, into their non-noted forms before hitting the bank. And this actually caused some controversy on social media, believe it or not, because they saw, hey, this incense is inserting noted items into the bank. Doesn't this mean we can use a similar technology for placeholders? But it's still, of course, using bank space and, you know, that the items are different. Because, say, a noted lobster is different than an actual lobster. They're different item IDs inside the game system. And as a result of that, this is creating the illusion of a bank placeholder, but in reality it's not a placeholder. So...
Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. See what people thought with this?
Yes, I see now. Because I was like, wait a minute, what's the big... I'm like, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, there's never been a noted item in my bank.
Right?
Okay.
And people thought, hey, maybe this is what we could do for placeholders. So. Right. Crafting logs into incense sticks is now remembered in the Make X options when producing from the same types of sticks, so you don't always need to choose the tool. Thank you. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
The life refresh can only be activated in a bank. We mentioned that. In the Firemaker's Cursed quest, fires created throughout no longer block the player's movement. Yay, that's nice. And, you know, fires should never block the player's movement.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
Man, you have no idea.
I know what you're going at. In regards to the next Angel of Death tweaks from the previous week, main tank loot is no longer dropped if the tank will leave the instance. So if you have a tank in there, then he leaves, you won't get any tank loot dropped from next, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Players who roll on the participation table at next Angel of Death now correctly receive kill counts in all instances. So easy way to get a kill count for that boss if you're hunting it down. The Ring of Death for Death's Door now offers an overcharge option for this ring. Unlocking the option costs 150 Reaper points and then may be overcharged in Death's Dialogue at a cost of 5 cut onyx and 25 Blackstone Hearts. Blackstone Hearts come from Elite Dungeon 3. So here's our onyx sink we were talking about.
Yeah, overcharge, like, does that make it like, what, 500%? Like,
let's see if I can pull anything up on that. Because, of course, the Ring of Death is the one that's created from Hydrix. And to create Hydrix, you need an onyx. So it makes sense that recharging it with onyx works.
Right. I think it's two. Well, yeah, it's two onyx for.
So what it effectively means by overcharging is that it's kind of like the Draken's Medallion overcharge, where you could just have an excess amount of charges on it. So you just add more charges to the Ring of Death. That's what that means.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
That was unclear.
Yeah, it's not clear unless you've used it or you know what their exact lingo is with that. I had to think a moment on that myself. Overcharged rings take 10 onyx to recharge, but only cost 3% charge per death teleport.
Oh, that's actually a lot. Yeah, it's cheaper.
Yeah, so it is. So 10 onyx to recharge. So you overcharge it for 5 and then recharge it again for 10 onyx. Hmm. So my question after this one and after the talk we've been having on the last couple episodes is, what do we do with onyx now? Is this going to be enough of an onyx sink to warrant another source of onyx in game?
I don't know. I mean, is that what PVMers wear? Is that the
it's a high level ring item, but also, onyx was at alc value, so this is the way of taking out all these onyxes from the game. And my question is, what happens after they've been taken out? What will happen to the price of onyx, and do we need another source of onyx? And
I don't know if that's going to be the case, man.
You don't think that this will take all the onyxes in game that were out or that were brought in?
Not necessarily, because it's all about the price of death. And I don't know if it might still be cheaper to just pay the death cost than to buy onyx. I mean, I'm not sure.
I actually have to send this patch note to David, because he's actually working on an Informer article on this very subject, the cost of PVM and death. So
that would be good.
That's a very important thing to ask. So I'm going to follow up on that, and hopefully we'll get some of that into his Informer article this week. Next up, you can now craft Divine Charges with a full inventory if a stack of charges is already present.
Oh, that's cool.
So, that's fun. The rate at which you receive warning messages for getting reduced rates due to your pickaxe level when mining has been lowered. And in case you're wondering what this is about, this basically means that, if you're, say, using a Dracolith pickaxe or a rune pickaxe, but you're a high mining level, you're going to get warnings that say, hey, you're not being as efficient as you could for your mining. So that's what this one is pertaining to. So next up, the percent character has returned to buff icons.
Percent character?
Yeah, like the percent sign.
Okay.
I mean, I never noticed it was missing, but there it is.
Oh, yeah, that was the first thing I spotted.
Okay, all right. Two new tunnels have appeared in the walls of the Kalphite Lair. These require level 55 and 79 agility to traverse. Kalphite Lair is old. Nice to see these tunnels being added to this still in-game. Nice level of TLC on old boss content, one of the first bosses to come into the game after the King Black Dragon. Speaking of agility shortcuts, there's been another one that was added, accessed south of the entrance of Tarn's Lair in the Haunted Mine, Leading to the Crystal Mine, this will require completion of the Haunted Mine Quest and the Hard Mauritania achievement set to activate. So this is a way to tie in with the mining reward for anybody who wants to mine ore down there, because we all know how tedious it is to go through the Haunted Mine, right? So following up from our discussion about the Saren spirits having a jingle when they appear, a timer bar also appears above the head of the Saren spirit, indicating how much time left you have to click it. Did you notice that as well?
No. Actually, I didn't.
Okay. Right, fair enough. A message will also appear if a Saren spirit despawns before you could claim its reward.
Ooh, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of normally the rewards are like, oh, okay. But if it's something big, then you're gonna feel sad about that.
Yeah, they just had to make you sad.
Yeah. Orokami masks can now be stored in the player-owned house costume room's fancy dress box. Okay, I don't really care about those masks. I never really picked any up, so that's fine by me.
Yeah, me neither.
Players can now again store logs with Auguste for hot air balloon charges. Captain Picard, nice. What?
Who rides the hot air balloon?
The hot air balloons are very useful for doing mud rune crafting, potentially, if you're going through Castle Wars. Yeah, because you can go from Castle Wars to to effectively the Earth Altar, and that's one way of creating mud runes. Another way is to use Lumber Mill teleport sheets from Clue Scrolls. So if you didn't have the teleport parchments from the Clue Scroll to go to the Lumber Mill, you would use the hot air balloon.
Okay,
to get,
fair enough.
To get to that, that for mud rune crafting. You can tell I've done mud rune crafting before.
Yeah, a few times.
Move the Slayer Tower hidey hole to inside the building closer to the spot that you actually need its items. That's good. Teleport-wise, teleport scrolls earned from treasure trails can now be stored as charges in the Globetrotter arm guards, up to 1,000 teleports of each type. We were just talking about those teleport scrolls.
Sweet. Yeah.
So what that means effectively is that you get one more rune when you're runecrafting, and if you wanted to give up, I don't know if you'd want to give up your ethereal outfit if you're mud runecrafting, to be honest, though, for a Globetrotter. Like the full ethereal set effect. I don't know if you'd want to give that up to wear the Globetrotter arm guards for one more slot, but it is an option if you wanted to. I don't think it would be optimal.
Yeah, that would cut your numbers down, wouldn't it?
Arc Island teleport tablets can now be stored and used in your Arc Journal, up to 1,000 charges per location.
Okay.
I had no idea these were a thing prior to this. This patch note. That's how much I've moved on from the Ark.
I didn't really know there was Ark teleports either.
Yeah. But the same is also true for Menaphos teleport tablets and its corresponding journal.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the lodestone's like right smack in the middle.
Yeah, so just use that. Next change is for trimmed masterwork. Players may now custom fit normal pieces of trimmed masterwork armor without requiring an entirely new set. Previously, a player was required to wear an entirely new set of trimmed masterwork armor to custom fit one piece that they may have previously lost or destroyed. So if you lose a piece, you only need to wear that one piece now. So that's good.
Yep, good change.
Yeah. Wilderness, an issue that was causing a crash when checking Slayer options via the Ring of Slaying while having a task from Mandrith, has been fixed. Of course, Mandrith is the new Slayer master that was added to Edgefill. And all the Revenant pets can now be used as familiar overrides that you get from killing Revenants in the Wilderness.
And finally,
some of the more random events that occurred in Zanaris have been removed.
Oh, that's good.
No, it's that, not. Like,
that thing where it's like you're
into a cow, right? The choir comes to sing to you. I enjoyed that. It was part of the charm of that place.
Ugh, it's annoying.
I don't know. Listeners will have to sound off on that. Personally, I enjoyed those little random events.
That's the like where it stops you when you're trying to run or something.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, or the choir starts following you, or you turn into an animal or something, or you're chicken, and you're like, what happened there?
So. Yeah, that exactly. Yeah, I'm glad to see that. No, bye bye.
Okay, fine. All right. Month ahead, April. Pretty thin month, I think. Hey. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, though. I mean,
I'm going to say something I probably haven't said in a long time, okay. If at all. I think the thing to be looking forward to is maybe the Easter event. Maybe? Like,
well, there's a giant Easter bunny prancing through the Jagex offices on this behind-the-scenes video.
Yeah.
So the first thing is the Gilded Extravaganza, which, of course, is Easter time around Lumbridge and the various Gildenor guilds. And this will include a temporary Easter quest, including cooking a cake pie for the Chef's Guild, creating sword sharkuna, which is a tuna inside of a swordfish inside of a shark that they say is borderline inedible and questionably unethical for the fishing guild, and helping the crafting guild decorate an ornate, elaborate Easter egg. Players do not need to be a member of the guild to do the part of the quest.
Have no problem with us putting their employees in cages. But putting a tuna inside a swordfish, now that might be unethical.
Yeah, they should let us put J-Mods inside cages at RuneFest.
Oh, jeez.
You know, there's nothing – you know, I have to just say that here in Alberta, one of the largest subpopulations that immigrated here in the early 1900s and late 1800s was the Ukrainian population. And they dotted the countryside of rural Alberta. And one of the towns in rural Alberta is called Andrew. And it has this gigantic, huge Easter egg that is – for all intents and purposes, a Ukrainian Easter egg. And I'm wondering if this huge Easter egg that we're going to be decorating is actually going to be looking like this at some point throughout its process. I don't know, but that's something that I'm going to be keeping my eye on with this.
Hmm. Yeah.
They also have a headline called Avoiding Dental Catastrophe. As exciting as the Easter Bunny is, he's also a little bit worried about some of the hidden eggs that may have hardened and crystallized over time. And should they be discovered by the fine people of Gilenar and subsequently chewed, then a wide range of toothy calamity could result. So as a result of this, you need to clean up these eggs. So you're going to be finding through skilling activities, various little eggs, and drop rates throughout the event will be better when skilling in and around the springtime feed areas. And once all the pieces have been gathered together to form a giant egg, the Easter Bunny will do his thang. That's exactly what the news post says. It will do its thang and decrystallize it, creating a small trove of goodies for all to enjoy. I don't know if that's okay. The right word to use there.
He's going to do his thing.
Yeah, that's precisely it.
Maybe someone thought they were being cute.
Maybe. There's also some quality of life improvements coming for clans, including special broadcasts if you've been a member for 3, 6, or 9 months, and then on every year anniversary of you joining your clan when you next log in. The clan info interface will also be refreshed, including the clan's creation date being added to it. The Vexilum option will be removed from the notice board edit interface. Never really made much sense to have that there. Clan event reminder notifications will be updated to include more information about upcoming clan events. Players will be able to view the job title of a clan member by hovering over their rank icon in clan chat. Okay, that area is getting a little bit crowded with information, but we'll accept this as it is right now. The clan log will be updated to show last week's visitor and capped count. Clans can set a total level requirement for joining their clan. If a player is trying to be invited that doesn't match the clan's requirement, they will not be able to join. However, if an owner invites a player, it will bypass this check, as well as a whole bunch of other small UI tweaks and improvements, including improvements to clan chat, which include the ability to view the clan you're currently guesting in by clicking on the I button. Clan staff can also set up a guest clan pin that will stop guests who don't know it from entering the clan. And if this pin is changed, any guests reconnecting to join the chat will be kicked out and have to re-enter the pin. So you can effectively say that you only want certain people joining your clan chat as a guest if you give them the pin. Clans will also be able to set up the total level requirement to join in their clan chat. Huh. This is apparently being made to stop new accounts from flaming clan chats.
Oh, okay. I was trying to figure out, because I was totally looking at it from a different perspective. I was thinking, oh, I don't know, that seems kind of elitist. Like, not sure about all that, but I guess if you have those requirements, it would make sense. And yeah, it definitely.
And if you have a flaming problem.
Yeah, but doesn't the pin already address that? With the guest?
Well, I mean, you could have either as a threshold, right? Like, I see the pin as more of a lockdown option if you want it to kind of function as a quasi-friends chat, too.
I see.
Or, you know, you want to have an entire range of levels being able to join, and then you post on your recruitment thread, the pin is 1, 2, 3, 4. So, that's the way I see that being useful and how I reconcile having both of them available. Arrive on April 29th. Mini quests will be added to the quest list. There will be an option also to toggle them off. These include the Fremenic Sagas, Tales, and generic mini quests. And oh boy, there are a lot of them. I'm kind of worried to see how many of these I've actually done. I think I've done most of them, but I'm not sure that they're all done. I know I haven't done the Fremenic Sagas, because you need to unlock those through Dungeoneering.
Yeah, and I'm actually glad for this change because, as it stands now, that's one of your requirements for comp, but it's kind of a pain to go through and figure out everything you've done and what you haven't done and this and that, so.
Yeah.
Good change.
Yeah, it's going to be a good change. My question is this going to be part of completing the quest cape list? Because the quest cape list has always been governed by, have you completed all the quests on the quest list? My guess is
no, because there's no way that would be, because those are required for master quest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough, as they say in Zanaris. If you get the reference, mm-hmm. I'll also be having portable Vic, as we talked about last week at length. Refresh for the Oddments store, including a new Solite armor set and Lunite armor set. All of these available for various oddment prices. And a new Solomon's general store item, too. The Risen, a fallen warrior mage that has met his gruesome end in the swamps of Mortmire, has returned to claim his kingdom once again. This will be available to buy from April 8th and onwards. So it's been a while since we've had something added to the store like that. So be interesting to see what this one looks like. So that is the month ahead. So our next piece of news here is something that we don't normally talk about because when it comes down to it, we don't like rehashing arguments or posts made on social media, in particular Reddit. But this was the best summary of the events that transpired that we could find. And normally we don't talk about these things because, I mean, it's inside baseball and we only here want to talk about things that we know are actually true and actually factful, because I think that makes for a good podcast and trying to avoid conjecture in particular about the company, unless we're trying to come up with, say, a new skill or a new design or something along the lines of that. So with that being said,
yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit about Jagex appearing before before a UK Parliament committee about microtransactions and growth of the game, and in particular RuneScape. So this week, Neil McLarty and Kevin Plummer, who are respectively VP Growth of Product Services and Director of Player Experience, at JAGEX testified in front of the Digital Culture, Media, and Sport Committee. And this is the committee in the UK Parliament that is tasked with examining certain issues regarding gambling, regarding gameplay. And, you know, normally you would say sport and media, and, you know, that's probably where JAGEX is coming from on this. But the very fact digital is also in here implies why they're here. So the committee... A committee's role in a parliamentary system is to effectively subpoena people, talk to people, take their testimony, and then report back to Parliament on a specific issue. And the issue that they were appearing for in this case was immersive and addictive technologies, and in particular, that means gambling. And, you know, you could say that microtransactions in the form of Treasure Hunter is gambling, and the definition that JAGEX and many others do to say that it's not gambling is that, hey, you're going to get something regardless of whether you put in 5 spins or 50 spins, and it's just going to be a question of value that you're going to get. You're not necessarily going to be robbed, and you're not going to walk away with nothing, as happens when you purchase a lottery ticket in real life. So this was a longish testimony, around 2 hours or so, and we're going to just talk about some of the bullet points that were made in this post in terms of summary here. And, you know, what's being said here has to be completely truthful, because if you lie to one of these committees, that can fall under the grounds of I don't know if it's necessarily perjury, but it's something like it. So you want to be honest when you talk to these committees.
That's a felony if you lie to Congress here, or it's supposed to be.
Right. So JAGEX ultimately has a cap on microtransactions of 5,000 British pounds per month for each player. Only one player has hit this limit in the past 12 months, and they say this limit is in place for fraud.
Because 5,000
pounds
a month?
Yeah. They say this is because they want the players to decide what they want to do and how they want to play the game.
You better decide what you're going to do with your life if you'd spent 5 grand on keys in a month. I'm
uh-huh.
just saying.
Uh-huh.
Huh. Wow. Yeah. Is that like a Saudi prince or something? Like, who can do that?
I don't know. The average spend for all users, across all users of the game for an entire year on microtransaction is £45 only. And when JAGEX was asked about how much paying customers spend per year, they didn't provide the information, despite saying that they knew the figures, but they didn't want to say because it can cut into their commercial place in the market. There was a story also presented of one user who ran up charges of up to £17,000 before microtransactions, before his dad had to bail him out. JAGEX had to reply with a typical customer service email, or letter rather, and they said they really couldn't do anything about it because there's privacy protections in place under GDPR in the EU, and they could only provide evidence by responding to the fact that there was a microtransaction addiction happening and provide the player in question with resources where they can get help if they want to.
I'll help you, all right.
Okay.
If you stole my credit card and you're my kid, oh, I'll help you. We'll do it. We'll do some tough love style. I mean, seriously though, how do you put that on JAGEX or any of the companies for that reason?
Yeah, like, exactly. It is a parenting issue in that case. And, you know, that's where this post started to get a little bit fishy for me and the entire aspect of the committee. Because it seems as though that this was something in the UK that happened, and the dad in this case complained to JAGEX and took it to various government levels, and that's what spawned this investigation at the committee is what my hunch is on this. I have no way of outright proving that. And, you know, JAGEX's response is that, hey, we can't tell anyone, even if it's apparent, about that, because it comes down to GDPR and third-party interventions with that, which is interesting because I think everybody at the time GDPR came out was championing it. But at the same time, here is a very clear downside of it.
But that should be in very limited cases. Like, I can understand that if it's a health, like certain health related topics.
Yeah.
Might be entirely, but.
And when it comes to mental health as well, it also came out in the committee that Jagex monitors all the chat in-game for specific words or triggers that could signal a mental health issue with any of their players and reports to law enforcement if necessary. And we've known that for years.
Yeah.
Jagex denies being a gambling company and denied overly targeting its users for monetization. Yeah, of course they're not a gambling company. Look at any look at any Chinese mobile game out there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you don't have to look at Chinese. Just look at any other loot boxes where you get trash. You get nothing.
Yeah. And, you know, overtly targeting its players for monetization. One question was asked, hey, if I log out, is it possible I could get an email telling me to come back and play some more, maybe buy some keys? They said it's unlikely because all campaigns for microtransactions and, you know, getting people to purchase microtransactions, the emails we get, the special offers, those are built based on internal analytics and sent out manually.
You know, I am not a libertarian, really, but I feel like that's one example to where the customers would say, piss off, and would get so mad that they would have to not do that because people would, like, cancel their subscriptions. They'd be like, no, I'm done.
I don't exactly follow what you're saying. Oh, about saying
that. Like, if you logged out and then got an email, come back and do some, buy some keys, like, people wouldn't stand for that.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that is not RuneScape.
No.
No. Jagex also denied that the game is of RuneScape is addictive, rejecting the suggestion on many occasions. There was a question of how many people play for 12 hours a day, and they said, you know, it's very rare. It's largely centered around events only.
Bullshit! sorry. Had something in my throat there.
You know
that's not true. Yeah, there's no
way
that's true.
I know it's not true. I've seen that happen, too.
I'm just saying, they lie to their friends, I'll lie to mine. But
and, you know, they were wondering, is RuneScape specifically addictive? And it kept coming back that gaming under the right circumstances and the right mindset that the game creates can be addictive, which I think is obvious to anyone with a brain, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's any different. I mean, RuneScape isn't different than any other game in that respect. No, at least I don't think so.
They were asked about the logout timer, how it was increased from 4 to 6 hours. Have you ever hit the logout timer of 6?
Only on double XP weekends. Okay.
I have never hit the logout timer on 6. I hit it once on 4, but that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even that big of a deal. Like,
yeah. I think my average play session is somewhere between an hour and 2 hours.
See, and like I mean, I have a little bit more than I used to, but 3-4 hours at best. Now, like once in a while on the weekends when I was streaming a lot, you know, I would go a lot more than that, but that was different. Yeah. You had a reason, you know.
Uh-huh. Now some general demographics information also did come out with this. 100,000 plus players playing every day. We know that based on the player counts on the website. Average player time is 2.5 hours a day.
That seems about right, yeah.
Average players played for 8 years.
Wow, dude.
That's a long
dude. Time. See? I've been saying that. I'm telling you, there are no new players. There are new accounts.
You ready for the kicker?
Oh, yeah. I got to.
Average age is 22. 2% are under the age of 18.
I could have told you that, too. Now, they started maybe when they were 12 or 13, but now after 8 or 9 or 10 or 15 years, we're all getting older.
Yep. They were asked if they reach out to players. They do reach out to players who haven't played in a long time. We know that.
Yeah.
Is RuneScape a game that never ends? They have heard of players playing all night. Are you aware of people playing 10 to 12 hours in a single session? They said, it is extremely rare and infrequent. And for a small section of the community, and usually around a particular piece of content, like new releases, large amount of tasks benefit shorter game play time, such as dailies. So long play time is not rewarded in the same way as longer play.
Except for three times a year. When I bet there's quite a few people going over that little.
Yeah, I think that will probably be an aberration.
Three times a year.
They didn't shed too much on the microtransaction annually, but what it came down to is that RuneScape is still an inherently subscription-based game. The first thing people pay for is their members, of course, £7 a month or $12 a year here in the US. We talked about the average that they spend on microtransactions, and that's for the bulk of it. 1/3 of the revenue is from microtransactions, 2/3 from subscription. Once again, we knew that based on their annual corporate reporting. Let's see, what else have we got here? We got to the cap on microtransactions. Spending, and they said what determines price differences for microtransactions in Solomon's General Store. It ultimately comes down to how flashy the item looks. So they say it's gauged based on the amount of work that goes into it. So artists, animators, that kind of thing, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. Nothing new there. Now, in regards to the person who spent £17,000. This included a bank statement for £247 spent in one day. And
pay to win, pay to win.
And, you know, this whole thing started with the dad writing to the committee about how he had to bail out his son with his life savings.
But here's what I want to know. Is the kid over 18? Is the kid under 18? Kid's over 18, then that's a whole different ball game. If he's under 18, then he got a hold of your credit card.
That's a problem in itself.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like this, I mean, look, I really kind of want to know that question because it keeps sounding like, oh, I had to bail my kid out. Okay, well, how old's the kid?
Yeah.
22? Or
the
like,
information
you know, what
here
you,
has not been provided. Jagex sent the information to have the necessary help sent, and the sense that was given by Jagex, it's not Jagex's fault, and I'm going to side with them on that. It is not Jagex's fault if someone gets addicted to whatever and blows that much money on it. That's just an issue of self-control and bad parenting.
Yeah, if you're over 18. What's the difference between getting in trouble with this or getting in trouble with anything with a credit card,
precisely,
for that matter? I don't know. I mean,
yeah, and you know, like this is a good summary of this post. I think that the committee was perhaps a bit too harsh on Jagex for this, because this makes it sound as though that this is a problem with addiction, but when asked specifically what feedbacks or complaints from players do you receive around microtransactions, 25 complaints were made where players reference an addiction.
I just think it's kind of ironic that the one company that isn't as bad about this got singled out. Like, you ever heard of EA?
Yeah.
No? Like, you hit Jagex. It's kind of weird.
This is going to come back to something I'm going to say, is that the vast majority of people in government are stupid.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree.
So, yeah. There's that.
That must be universal.
Oh, it is, believe me. And, you know, in regards to social responsibility, they mentioned their mental health initiatives and work with charities in game, such as awareness with the local Mind organization, SPCL, and whatnot, which was actually mentioned for the Easter event too. So this is an ongoing theme in game. And, you know, Jagex says we're proactive and they screen chat and whatnot. So, you know, this is something that I think Jagex is doing well and is constantly proven by the aspects that they see in game. Then they were really heavily questioned about the 6-hour logout timer and why it was there. And Jagex said that, you know, playing or doing anything for 6 hours isn't good and people should ultimately take a break.
Mm-hmm.
But we all know that people do go past the 6-hour timer. So, you know, I'm not exactly sure what else there is to say about this here. The job of the data team came up as well in regarding game data and player bans. They say the job of the data team is to analyze player behavior. Commercial value is for you to make the most of data to improve the game as long as you aren't selling it. And they say, yeah, game retention and engagement is a key metric, and no one will pay for something that they don't want to engage with, and that's what they use for. And they did say that they don't sell it. They said, if a Cambridge-based psychometric center reached out, would you engage and have you shared data before on an aggregated basis? Now, they said, not proactively. We have done on individual cases at times. GDPR responsibilities might get in the way, and even pre-GDPR, we wouldn't have shared individual data. We'll write to the committee to explain if any aggregated data has been shared before. Then they talked that, hey, we use data detection for cheat programs too. 96% of complaints are dealt within 48 hours, and there are bans that are issued, of course. 23,000 daily offenses. Vast majority is related to cheating, 99% of them. Language, 0.2%. Scamming, 0.1%. And there's less than 200 community safety cases per year that are elevated to law enforcement. So I think overall, Jagex did pretty well with this case at the committee. And this was – it seems as though this was just spurred on – in particular regarding the MTX side, spurred on by the one case of them writing – of the father writing to the committee. So
yeah.
I don't think there's anything to worry about with this. I think Jagex did well, and I think as a gaming company, they're in a good place for dealing with this sort of thing.
Yeah, totally. And, I mean, look at this. If the heat ever came down, they could just move across the pond, and you can do anything you want here.
Yeah, including including rushing certification of airplanes before they're ready.
Hey, we'll make it an option.
Yeah, and you know, I was in the camp that I thought that the 737 MAX issues were going to be related to pilot error, but apparently,
when you order, remember to get the automatic windows next time. You definitely need the tell me if my plane is going down option. You knew that, right, Shane? They had.
Oh yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But yeah. You know, there are. Actually, this isn't an aviation show, but there are ways of.
I know.
There are ways of noticing that that's happening before that, and it's in regards just a single light. But in reality, you know, if it wasn't necessarily due to the system overriding it, a pilot would be able to recover from it. So that's why I thought it was going to be pilot error, but. I mean, hey, if anybody ever has a question about aviation, fire it away. Anyways, we should move on. That was a nice little aviation bit there.
Little aside.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, before we sat down here, we recorded our monthly bid. And yeah, it's a little bit late. Unfortunately, I came down with a bit of the flu this past week, so we had to delay it. But... this is all in relation to our Patreon page, which you can find at patreon.com/rsbnb. And this month, being the first week of the month, we would like to thank for their wonderful support Brock H., Diana, Jason R., Kyle, Tom V., Zach K., and Zez. Thank you all of you for your wonderful support. You make doing RSBNB Update possible with everything that you guys do for our community, and we wouldn't be in the position that we are in without you guys. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
And in case you're wondering what this is all about, head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB. We're currently working towards our tier called the RSBNB Update Roundtable, where at the beginning of every month, we'll do a roundtable discussion in Discord about anything and everything RuneScape related. And that's at $50 a month. We're currently at $37. So if you want to help us out get there, just head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB, and you can subscribe there for as little as $1 a month. And in doing that, you'll receive a special mention in our show notes, early access to the show notes, the ability to join in on the roundtable discussion, and vote on topics for our monthly bit, which we just recorded. The Patreon-suggested topic this month was the next skill, and that was an amazing monthly bit. I really enjoyed that one. So that'll be going up to Patreon supporters by the time that you hear that. And if you want to take it a step further, for $3 a month, we have the special VIP rank on Discord, a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show, in addition to everything else. And finally, for $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out on the podcast every week, gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use for the clip show, and in addition, you will, of course, with all of these, be helping us fund the costs for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. And what we do with this is we have our monthly bit bonus show, which is going to be going out soon. This one, as I said, was about the next skill in game. We also have Inside RSBNB Update, where it'll be an inside look at our hosts, including interviews and maybe even a sneak peek of our recording areas and how the podcast comes together. This month was you, Tanis, so that was a fun little interview to put together. Patreon supporters have access to that.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
And, of course, I already mentioned the round table. And if we reach $99 a month, we will have movie night with Shane and Tanis, where we'll be watching movies on Discord once a month. And this will probably include some Star Trek movies. So be quite the treat to get there at some point. But if you want to find out more about this, just head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB. Thank you very much, everyone. All right. So we do have two questions this week. The first one from Tycho. On this day of recording, new changes have been made to the comp design document to make it more clear and straightforward for players that what Jagex is aiming for. We have previously, with updates presented by Jagex, being influenced by players. While I love how the developers take the feedback and opinion of players, I myself have given my fair share of constructive feedback on this, and even had dialogue written for the Lorehound pet, I sometimes find that Jagex is afraid for hurting the players. My question is today, if you were to use a one sentence as a rule of thumb when to decide for yourself and when to listen to the public, what would that be? And as a bonus question, we often hear path to success, but not often how to come back from a failure. If you imagine yourselves making a huge mistake that hurts a number of people close to you, co-workers and our relatives, how would you recover from that? Keep on with the long podcast and go for that 2 hour plus episode. Tycho Elf of the Nordic Lands.
Oh, Tycho Elf. He likes the long ones, huh?
Yeah. So before we do this, I think we need to have a look at what was changed in the comp design rework. Let me pull that up. Because I think that we need to have a good basis for that before going through this question. So anybody can find this document. You can find it at rs.game/compdesign, and this will forward to the Google Doc on this matter. Okay. Wow. Okay, we have a completely different comp design here. let's talk a bit about this, then we'll get into the questions. Sound good?
Why not?
Let's strap in and have some fun, I guess. Mm. So they're going to be changing some categories around. The completionist category is being removed. Everything in it will be removed into other categories, including a lore category. Exploration is being renamed areas, and minigames is being renamed activities. I think that makes sense, right?
whether it makes sense and whether it should happen might end up being two different questions. But yes.
Each category
makes sense.
With the exception of miscellaneous, we'll have three tiers of completionist achievements, tier 1, tier 2, and 3. Tier 1, the completionist will be defined as a player who has completed the core RuneScape experience. Tier 2, the true completionist will be a player who's completed everything except insane achievements. And tier 3, the insane completionist will be defined as a player who has completed everything and everything insane we've thrown at them.
Is that going to be like the trimmed?
It sounds like it, because the tier 2 and tier 3 achievement metas will both require their previous tiered meta 2. So to unlock the skills tier 2 cape, you'll first need a skills tier 1 cape. And to unlock the combat tier 3 cape, you'll first need a combat tier 2 cape. So for example here, skiller tier 1 is going to be max and 120s. Uh-huh.
What? What does that leave for?
I don't know. Just wait. Skiller tier 2 will be all skilling achievements except for insane. And skiller tier 3 will be all 120s and skill achievements. So max at 120s effectively means
120 all so, max.
So just wait. So skiller tier 1 is going to be 120 dungeoneering, 120 invention, 120 slayer, plus 99 and everything else. And tier 3 will be 120 in every skill.
Which, yeah, we need a 120 all max cape, but that was for looks. That wasn't for effect.
All right, let's break this down then. Let's just start with the lore. Tier 1 lore is completing all quests, which is visually the quest point cape. Okay. Tier 2 lore is completing all lore achievements that aren't insane, visually the Master Quest cape. And Tier 3 lore is completing all lore achievements, including the ones that are insane. Hmm. I think that's okay.
I guess.
Combat will be Tier 1, will be kill all the bosses once. This might be moved to Tier 2. Tier 2 will be complete all combat achievements. And Tier 3 will be all combat achievements, including ones that are insane, but nothing harder than 1K Enrage Telos.
Sure.
They're still discussing this internally about where they put forced group content. And this is most prevalent in regards to bosses such as raids. So we may move group bosses to tier 2. I think that makes sense. This is getting more complicated by the day, isn't it?
Listen, I love you guys, but just stop now. Stop now. You're wasting your time. I hate to say that. This is never going to happen. This is not going to happen. No one's going to like it. Don't do it. Like, this is not the good idea. I mean, I know there's different opinions on this. So it's, you just, it's asking for trouble.
Yeah. Now in regards to, skilling, so tier 1 will be getting all 99s and actual 120s, keyword on actual 120s. Tier 2, complete all skilling achievements that aren't insane. And tier 3 will be get all 120 all skills and complete all skilling achievements. I have a serious problem with this one. Because
I have a serious problem
saying,
with all of it.
Okay.
Like, the skilling ones, it's atrocious, dude. It's bullshit.
Yeah, we should not be setting a goalpost for 120s, virtual 120s, when we don't have content for it. We're shooting ourselves in the foot by that.
Well, and Max doesn't work that way, like right now. Like, Max is 99. If you're throwing in the 120s on the tier 1 cape, then 99 don't mean shit. That is nothing. It don't mean nothing no more.
And I guess people are supposed to have their max cape then as the consolation prize before you get to tier 1 skilling?
But the tier 1 should be the max cape as it stands. if you want to put tier 120s in for like and call it like true max, like you call the true completionist, that's where the 120s are, but only the 120s that actually affect
this
anything.
This is a real serious problem here with this. Is this what the community wanted?
No, the community. I'm telling you, Shane, this is never going to happen. If it does, it's grab your pitchforks. I really don't think this is where they should put their resources. I just really don't.
Do we want people to target 120s? Like, I see that as the projection of the way the game is going. But what happens if we take summoning to 120? People are going to have it when it comes out, and there's not going to be the joy of leveling up and discovering that.
And that's what happens every time they take anything to 120.
And this is a stupid idea to have this at tier 3, because it's an option in game if you turn on virtual levels. They're going to have to make levels to 120 for everything now with this.
It's dumb.
Like, we need more than 3 bullet points to describe why this is the case. I might still be able to be convinced this is a good idea, but everything inside me is saying that this is not a good idea, especially with tier 1 and definitely with tier 3.
And the fact that they didn't do what we suggested by taking the perks and adding them to the player.
I don't even know if we got to that point yet.
Well, I'm just saying though, like 120 all, I do believe there should be a cosmetic 120 all max cape. This is not what I envisioned. It should not be like this. Like when I envision like a cosmetic, it's just like the 120 capes now that are cosmetic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it wouldn't be any difference. But when you put it in this format, it's exactly what you said.
It's defining
now
an
the
end
goal
game.
Post is 120. Yes.
It's defining an end game when, you know, we've said before that this could have been done with the achievement system.
Well, but then they're trying to tie in the achievement system with something that's never been a part of skilling before. Like, and some of those achievements are just dumb anyway. Like, I don't know. I don't get it. I'm not happy with this design at all.
We need to keep drilling through this, so I'm going to say, Tycho, I appreciate your question, but I'm going to save this actually for next week because we do have a hard out in about a half hour on this show. So
thanks, Tycho. You got me all worked up. I'm all pissed off now. Now we have to take a week and think about it. It's all Tycho's fault.
And when we dismiss Sirion, in hindsight,
would have been good to have this
discussion continue on with him from the bit.
Well, but better when we have more time with Sirion, because we would have ended up just being on two different sides here. That would have taken a while.
I don't think he wants things to go to 120 either.
Well, no, but he is in favor of the rework. So I don't know.
I'm in favor of the rework too. It's just, it's not the right rework. It's like finding the right Brexit.
All right. So yeah. Like, okay.
Maybe that's what they're thinking of because they're in the UK with this.
Maybe. I say save yourself the trouble and give us something we'd actually want. But, you know, and that's the difference, though. You guys see it from this very mechanical perspective, and I'm really looking at this as someone that, like, worked really hard to get certain things, and now they're subject to just going away. And that's what makes RuneScape different than other games. I mean, if the average length of a player is here, it's 8 years, man, you're connected, you're attached. This is kind of part of you. Like, this is the one thing. They're playing a fire.
I can safely say that I will never get the tier three skilling achievement until all the skills go to 120. If this comes out. I will never answer that.
I don't know. I mean, I guess you could go for, I don't know. I'm not a fan. I might do that someday. I might get all 120s or whatever, and it would be cool if it was like
you
a
know
cosmetic
who I think they are listening to the core contingent of hardcore completionists in designing this. That's what this sounds like. This is what I've heard from various folks who enjoy skilling. This is what I've heard on Twitter and other social media too.
Well, I enjoy skilling as much as next person. I just don't think that that is the right. I don't think that's the right way. This started with just taking the stupid, obscene combat stuff off of the completion escape. You know what? If I get stuck having to do that stuff, then fine. It's better than this. This is just not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not good.
So I think it's safe to say we're discussing the comp cape rework again instead of doing questions. Sorry about that, everyone.
Yeah. I'm just shocked. Like I thought we kind of addressed it, you know, talked a lot about it.
And you know, in a way this is good because this is our live and raw views of this.
That's true. Yeah. I didn't get the Shane calm down before the show.
Areas tier one area achievements will be Taskmaster. Tier two will be complete all area achievements that aren't insane, and tier three will be complete all area achievements. I think that one's okay.
Yeah, that one actually isn't bad.
Activities. Tier 1 will be complete every activity at least once. This includes minigames and D&Ds. It seems easy. Tier 2, complete all activity achievements that aren't insane. And Tier 3, complete all activity achievements, including ones that are insane, but nothing longer than Castle Wars.
I don't understand why they're carving all this out like this. Like it feels too carved out now. It feels too chopped up.
Anything that can't find a home and is tangential to your RuneScape experience will be in the miscellaneous category. The miscellaneous category won't be tiered and won't have any requirements for the tiered completionist capes. So what exactly is an insane achievement? And they say our definition of insane achievements is something in which players could consider unfair or unreasonable to be on the tier 2 comp cape. And anything that is insane will be pushed to Tier 3. There will be some achievements that are even too much for Tier 3 capes. It'll be quite subjective, but there won't be anything that takes longer than getting the Castle Wars Profound Armor or anything harder than getting a 1K Telos and Rage Kill on any completionist cape. This might sound a little confusing, so we've provided some examples in this Google Sheet. And this goes to a Google spreadsheet, work in progress, and doesn't contain every achievement. So looking at the skills category and skills tier 1, tier 2 skilling achievement would be smithing a full set of Elder Rune, upgrading a Ferocious Ring, Invention gives me the blues, which means all blueprints in device trees, Data Recovery, Hall of Memories, Heal Quickly, Unlock Rapid Renewal, Everything is Awesome, which is mining 100 of each ore, Working on your artisan, unlocking all artisans' workshops. Almost as perky as a prawn perks. Perky like a prawn, all prawn perks. Scrolling with power, all dungeoneering scroll traits. Gilanorian cuisine, complete all food achievements. Special Slayer delivery, unlock the ability to craft Slayer items. Agile from head to toe, which of course is the agility armor. Enchanted Yaktui stick. Master auto. Completed barbarian training and unlock the of Daemonheim title. Tier three.
Well, that's, okay.
Tier three will be the stones throw away. Complete the Damarok statue. Who will be her lover? Complete the Rihanna statue. To be a master, complete the Slayer Codex. Why is the Slayer Codex in skilling?
I guess it's a skill.
Rhiannon the Gold, build the gold statue of Rhiannon in the Voice Tower. And rank Master Phoenix, rank 1 Esteem and Runespan, in addition to all actual and virtual 120s.
All right, so what I want to know is what are the stat differences on those capes, or is that not going to be a thing?
That's exactly as it was before in the last design.
Which is?
Let's see. So tier 1 combat would be plus 11 armor, plus 3 prayer bonus, and plus 5 to each style at all times. This doesn't use up your cape slot and would stack with any cape that you're wearing, and it would might be split between tier 1 and tier 2 combat.
Okay.
Skillings would have a similar benefit, as would questing. Those ones haven't been designed yet.
Well, and see, and that's what I want to know. What is the difference in the actual, either the stats or the perks or whatever it is, between the tier 1 skilling and the tier 2 and the tier 3.
Difficulty of the achievements on them.
Right. And
we don't know what the stat differences will be at this point.
I know, but that is what makes the huge difference. Like, that is it, all right there.
For passives, it still sounds as though they're wanting to remove those from the cape and adding them to the player. So there's the hot take on the comp cape rework as it stands today.
Here's my prediction, Shane. This is going to be so controversial, it's going to get pulled. And if they pull it correctly, it's going to get voted down. And not by a little bit, but by a lot.
You know, I think that the completionists are going to come out in force and enjoy this update. And enjoy this
in force? How much is their force?
Yeah. I don't know. I imagine this will be successful and this will be the design we see.
I don't think so. I don't. There's how many completionists do you think are out there? Now, more if they than, only pull completionists, fine. But if they pull the whole player base, no way. And I don't think completionists are going to do that. They've worked too hard to be messing around with this stuff. Like, I don't think so. You might get your PVM completionist who only have it for their cape anyway. Like, only have it because it's best in slot, but not, I don't think regular completionist would be all about this.
Okay. Well, as we said, I mean, we don't have any alternatives to this, because normally when we do this, we think about it for a bit. We say what we would do instead, and we don't have that here. This is just a hot take on this design doc change. So.
Well, yeah. But I think it's viable to say that my alternative is don't do it at all. Don't do it. Leave it as it is.
It might end up in that path, but I honestly think people are going to vote for this. I think this is going to be less controversial than what they had before, even if we don't like it.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
I think the idea in general is going to be controversial. It's not real to anybody yet. Once it starts actually getting pulled and stuff like that, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I didn't anticipate on touching the comp cape rework so soon, but what is this? Part 3? Part 4?
Yeah, something like that.
No. Okay. Well, I imagine we'll be talking more about this next week once we've solidified thoughts, because we just learned about it when we were reading your question, Tycho.
Yeah.
Been a busy day production-wise for us, so. All right. Let us move on to tech news. So in tech news, Anthem. You familiar with Anthem, a game by EA BioWare?
A little bit. I'm aware of the hype train that Anthem was on.
Yeah.
And then apparently it seems to have
cratered.
It ran across a bridge was out.
So it was initially going to be called Beyond. And there was so much strife inside the development team at BioWare that it actually led to people leaving the company and severe mental health issues regarding some on the dev team. And this week there was an article published in Kotaku about this. It's quite long, so I'll let the listeners read it. But it was it highlighted so many potential issues with Anthem that BioWare had to make a statement on this. And they said, first and foremost, we wholeheartedly stand by every current and former member of our team that worked on this, including leadership. It's a massive amount of effort, energy, and dedication to make any game. And of course, that's true. Making Anthem would not have been possible without every single one of their efforts. We chose not to comment or participate on the story because we felt there was an unfair focus on a specific team members and leaders who did their absolute best to bring this new idea to fans. We didn't want to be part of something attempting to bring them down as individuals. I think that makes sense. They put a great amount of emphasis on our workplace culture in our studios. The health and well-being of our team is something they take very seriously. They built out a new membership starting in 2017. And as a team, we accept all criticisms that came our way for the games that they make, especially from our players. The creative process is often difficult. The struggles and challenges of making video games are very real, but the reward of putting something we created into the hands of players is amazing. People in this industry put down so much passion and energy into making something fun. We don't see the value in tearing down one another or one another's work. We don't believe articles that do that are making our industry or craft better. Our full focus is on the players and continuing to make Anthem everything it can be for our community. Thank you to our fans for your support. Are you going to be playing Anthem?
No, probably not.
Yeah.
I just didn't see anything that was like really super interesting to me.
Yeah. It got to the point where they had even printed out Beyond t-shirts for the t-shirt or for the staff when they were going to be going to E3 to talk about it. And less than a week before the initial press conference was held, they found out that securing this trademark would be too difficult. Beyond was ruled out, and they switched it to Anthem. But whereas Beyond would have been indicative of what BioWare had hoped the game would be, you'd go beyond the walls of your fort and into the dangerous wilds around you, Anthem didn't really mean that much. Everybody was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. What does this have to do with anything? And, you know, this did cause huge strife on the game developer community, and this is something that BioWare has flirted with in the past. In particular, Kotaku mentions that one of their games, going back to 2012, an online cooperative shooter that was first teased and spent years in development, never really made it to purchase, and then we ended up here with Anthem in June of 2017. So I don't know. I think this is largely inside baseball with the developer here. And, you know, Kotaku, I think in general is one of the companies that is more necessarily geared towards talking about these things and not necessarily in a good or positive constructive way, I think. So it did come down from EA, but the upshot of this is that the development was a disaster, poorly managed. And when it comes down to it, hurt the company and hurt the developers involved in it. And here we are, we're seeing Kotaku talk about it, and then BioWare steps up and says, hey, our developers, you know, are doing the best that they can, and the reward at the end of the day is bringing it to the players. I don't think this is going to have any impact on Anthem sales. I never really saw it as much as being a top hot game. Did you?
No, not really. I know there, like I said, there was some hype for it, but you know what they need to do. It's just if they're serious about their game, if they love their game, you take the No Man's Sky approach and you knuckle down and you make it better.
Yeah.
Because no one was ridiculed more than those guys.
And they came
they
back
knuckled
from it.
Down and they did. And they made it better and better and better. And now it's going to VR. It's going to be amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Next tech news story, Facebook.
Oh, God.
So Facebook apparently asked users to enter in their email password in an attempt to secure your Facebook account. So the message given was to continue using Facebook, you'll need to confirm your email address. Since you signed up with email address redacted, you can do that automatically. And it asks for the user's email password. Now, there is, of course, a way around this if you click enough. But, I mean, people who are using Facebook at this point, I think, are the older generation, right? Probably. I think the younger people have moved off it.
Yeah, without a doubt. But because they're so trustworthy with all the rest of your information. Can I give me your email password, too?
You know, in security, this is something that you do not do. You never ask for a password from a different service to make something work. Nor should you be even thinking of handling a password around in the background. And, you know, people rightly admit that this probably isn't the best way of going about it. And Facebook's response to this was, "We understand the password verification isn't the best way to go about this, so we are going to stop offering it."
That's just stupid. Why wouldn't they have done two-factor authorization rather than this?
Well, no. You know what I mean? This is a way of, you know, getting into your account after you've lost it. So if you know your email password, it can just go in and read your email and find the email it sent you.
No, I don't trust Mark with any
thing.
What?
And this comes after Facebook said they want to be a privacy-focused company.
Yeah, they want to be focused on your privacy. They are focused on your private matters, and they are going to get them.
And there are additional login steps, and it was mentioned. And it's just absolutely absurd that Facebook would do this. And, you know, the option is going to be removed, but I just want to take this moment here and bring this up back to the high ground with this, is that never give your password for any website that isn't the website you're trying to log into to a different website. There are many, many great ways of accessing different accounts without a password that have been tried, tested, and proven secure. So don't do that. And thankfully, Facebook is removing this, but it's just absolutely absurd that they would even go down this path. And they tried to make it okay that, hey, we're not even storing this password.
It's never okay. If Facebook's doing it, it's not okay. Never okay. Well, in that case, it's never okay anyway. You don't ask for password. Like, I don't know.
Aye. All right. Final piece of tech news. Borderlands 3 has been announced.
Woo-hoo!
Unfortunately, it won't be on regular PC platforms until April 2020. It is going to arrive in September and start as an exclusive for 6 months on the Epic Games Store.
Well, that's on PC, right?
Yeah, but do you really want to install the Epic Launcher after what we talked about a couple weeks ago?
It's already there anyway. I mean,
oh, what do you use it for?
Free stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Subnautica mostly, because I got that free. But I tried to play Fortnite a little bit. I'm real good at hiding. I can't hit the broadside of a barn, but I can hide like a mofo.
You know, I don't like the Epic Store after what they've been doing. I don't like the ties that the company has to China, so I got rid of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I was interested in Borderlands 3, this would be a deal breaker.
Well, but see, I'm so interested in – I mean, I don't know. I guess it just depends on if you're a big Borderlands fan. And I am absolute crap at shooters, but Borderlands 2 is so fun. I played it with my friends, and it's so good. The humor, it's just fun. It's goofy. I want Borderlands 3, and I'll probably do whatever it takes to get it.
All right. The store has 85 million registered users, and 40% don't have Steam installed.
Oh, that's odd.
Yeah, it is odd. I don't know. I think.
Oh, I wonder if it's because it's cross-platform, because Fortnite's cross-platform, right?
Yes,
you can play
it is.
On anything.
Yeah.
So there's probably a bunch of Xbox.
But no. This is the Epic Game Store, though. That's PC-related.
Wouldn't you have to have the... launcher?
No, not on the Xbox or anything, no.
40% of just PC players?
Mm-hmm.
Don't have Steam?
Mm-hmm. That have the Epic Store installed.
That is very surprising to me.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have thought that at all. Huh. Well, someone should tell them there's a lot of stuff on Steam.
So this,
good and bad, but yeah. There's a lot more.
So it's not going to be a deal breaker for you to not have it available elsewhere. You'll get it through Epic.
No, I mean, I hate that. When they first came out with what they were doing, I thought it was going to shake things up. Then I found out about the whole Tencent thing.
And that's what bothers me.
That bugs me some. But at the same time, at least there is some option to have it on PC. They're not Red Dead-ing us here. So, I mean, I don't know. September, when are you going to get, how many months after?
Six.
Would we have to wait? Well, I guess that ain't too bad. It's only bad, though, if your friends get it and then you can't play it because you got principles.
Yeah.
You know? No, I probably would buy it for this. Yeah.
All right.
I hate it. I would reluctantly hold my nose to do it.
All right. Well, let's move on to some other things then. Our invention skill of the month is going on. It will be the last singular skill of the month. You can check that out at rsbnb.com/skotm. But before we move on to the achievements, I'll just take a moment to talk about April's Informer Roundup. A bit of a light month here at Informer for reasons. My illness, David's computer hit the bit for a bit. And we do have some other articles, though, including Alex's article on Bounty Hunter. Sirion talking about renewing the game in RuneScape, and the old makes way for the new. And, of course, you talking about ulterior motives and alt accounts and AltScape. So it was an interesting month. We also had the fishing skill of the month with Sorensen taking the win with 17.5 million XP gained. Parnassius came in second with 7.2 and Flash in third with 6.3. So before we move on to achievements, I'll just mention again that we are soliciting feedback on potential changes to Skill of the Month. So you can find a link in the show notes to that thread at update.rsbnb.com. But most of the changes suggested before have gone over quite well. So it's looking like we're going to head down that blueprint. So we only have a few achievements this week, so I'll just run through them since it's only a couple. So first up is Elven Badass with 99 farming on April 3rd. Captain Metaphor with 99 runecrafting on April 2nd. Nogard 210 with 99 attack on March 31st. Also Young Sad Boy with 99 thieving on the 31st. What? Which one's funny?
The name. Young Sad Boy.
Saturn Yain with 99 attack on the 29th. Dawn with 120 defense on the 27th. And Dr. Bruce with 99 mining on March 27th as well. All right. So I mentioned at the start of the show we have our spring survey going on. You can find that at update.rsbnb.com/survey. If you're listening to the show and you didn't hear it at the beginning or you're still thinking about it, we'd very much appreciate you filling that out. It will help us guide the direction for RSBNB Update going forward. Okay. So it's time for Pick of the Week, and we discussed doing this one, whether or not we should. And it's a Star Trek Pick of the Week, and I don't know if anyone's ever going to pick this up, but there is a series of books called Star Trek, Stellar Cryptography, the Starfleet Reference Library, and there was an updated version put out at the tail end of 2018. And what this is a collection of maps of the Star Trek universe. And this is pulled from various sources, including all the various episodes that are out there, some third-party sources, and includes some interesting notes and some fiction that you can read through, and kind of just provides a bit of an expansion on the lore in the series that exists. There are also I believe it's 10 poster-sized maps that come with this as well. So if you wanted to take them out of their packaging and frame them up as posters on the wall, so if you had actual maps, you could do that as well. But there's also a book. It comes in book form where you can read through it and you can see the maps in a book page. And with that also provides more information about the features detailed on the map, what might have happened in the various series and whatnot there. And I think the most interesting thing about this, just like the other stuff we've mentioned Star Trek related, is the presentation of this. It is billed as a hardcover book, but in itself is an entire experience in itself. So if there's anybody out there you know that is a Star Trek fan, this is definitely something that you should consider getting them. And you can find it on Amazon or pretty much any bookstore out there. So
very cool.
Yeah.
I can see that being like an essential thing if there was I don't know, maybe there is. Is there a Star Trek like LARP game or something
people do? There's the VR thing. I'm not aware of anything else though.
Mm. Okay. I'm just curious.
You might do a Star Trek D&D campaign, I'm not sure. But anyway.
And you have your maps and your charts, you know, kind of laid out.
Exactly. And, yeah. You know, this ties in with Star Trek Online. It ties in with the series. It's just a nice meshing of the entire series. So,
cool.
All right. So what have you been up to this week?
Well, I've been playing my alt a lot. And we're up to 95 farming already, Shane.
Ooh.
Can you believe that?
Ooh.
And I got brains this week.
Nice. So, oh,
yeah.
What were you doing?
Player on farm.
Were you shoveling crap?
No. I was checking Chimalpas, I think, at the time. Yeah.
Nice. So, I like brains. That was my first skilling pet. Came out or got it the day after the skilling pets were launched.
Yeah, that's cool. This is the only one I have on this account. So first and only. So yeah.
Very nice, very nice. That farm is pretty powerful, isn't it?
Oh, it's so good. Well, you remember, it's only been, a few weeks, maybe a month and a half or something. I was like, I'm starting to work on my farm on my alt. And I was like, level 57 or something? Now I'm up to 95.
Damn.
Yeah.
As for me this week, I'm continuing to work on the Masterwork Trims project. I currently only have 3 trims left to get. Money-making wise, though, it's been an interesting week. You know, we postulated on the podcast that the Lantatimi sticks were going to be the most, right?
Mm-hmm.
At their peak this week, those things were selling for 80% above market value.
Oh. Nice.
And if you
farm, make some money, Shane?
Oh, definitely. I made like 10 mil off them.
Oh, snap.
And if you farm your own herbs and you have your own logs, you only need to buy the ashes, and that's cheap enough. And that's with buying the ashes. I made 10 mil.
Oh, yeah.
So they're still above market today. So anybody listening to this, check into the Lantatimi sticks and pretty much any stick that provides a benefit that's going to be good for everyone is going to be a good stick to make, especially if it's got high-level ashes to it, because those are hard to farm from abyssal demons. So I'm enjoying the incense stick update.
Very cool.
All right. Well, I believe that's it for this episode of RSVNB Update. We took a bit of an unexpected turn there, but I think we needed to do that.
You know, sometimes it's good to take the road less traveled, right?
Indeed, indeed. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for more RSVNB Update, more listener questions, I promise, and probably some more talk about the comp rework too, I think. So with that being said, we'll see you next week, everyone. Take care.
See ya.